Kac-Moody algebra is a sort of a theoretical part, you could say, of physics. So it's related to superstring theory. I don't know if somebody knows about these theories. After my PhD, I started working as a researcher because I was always also busy with music. And I wanted to combine music and mathematics. And after my PhD, therefore, I started working as a researcher at the Institute for Psychoacoustics and Electronic Music. It's a subdivision of the Faculty of Arts at the University of Ghent. And there I was doing research on music and emotions. So the study was, how can you, in a sort of a way, put emotions that you have when you listen to music, how can you quantify that? How can you put that into a sort of a mathematical model? And is there a way to do something, once you have such models, can you do something artistically with these models? So that was the aim of the research. The research lasted for 4 years at the institute. And then after that, I started another study at the conservatory in Ghent. So I started studying music production. Because besides my scientific activities, I was always also busy producing tracks, producing songs. I was very interested into the whole process, just making records. And that's also why I started studying conservatory, because I wanted to have a real good overview of the whole field. I had no formal musical training before, so. After my PhD also, I started, because my PhD was really in the area of theoretical mathematics, so it was really hardcore geometry and algebra. And after my PhD, I decided to look around into the field of applied mathematics. Because if you say to the community of pure mathematicians that you do applied mathematics, they're like, it's
dirty.
Yes, it's dirty. So, but I didn't mind, you know. But I was also interested. It also attracted me because, of course, you have the big area of artificial intelligence, which is really very close to the area of applied mathematics. And I came into contact with artificial intelligence in my research on music and emotions at this institute. So you need artificial intelligence to do things with emotions and music. And so,
what do you mean you by artificial intelligence when you say you need artificial intelligence?
The reason is that when emotions, to make it short, in artificial intelligence, originally, what they wanted to do and what they still want to do is try to make a computer that thinks like a human being. But they see now that it's impossible because our brain is much more complex than stupid computers. And after that, in the 90s, they started thinking, but maybe we can try to use something else, emotions. Maybe we can focus on that. That's another part. But of course, emotions, it's also like the things I'm going to explain here. These are non-deterministic systems. I mean, it's not A, B. And therefore, you cannot apply the normal applied mathematical tools, like you have correlation, for example. You cannot do that. You have to have a sort of, they call it a black box method. And in a black box method, you make a sort of a mathematical model. You're not interested what is inside the box. You only want it to work. And what you do is you shortcut, so you give an input into the black box, and then the black box, there's a model inside, gives an output. And you see, is this the output that I want? Okay, then it's good. If it is not good, then you try another input, it gives a bad output, and then you try to reconfigure the structure inside the black box, and it's an iterative process. It maybe has to, you have to repeat it a million times until one of us, all of a sudden, the black box has the knowledge to give the right output whenever you give the right input. And these techniques are used in artificial intelligence. That's what it's all about. So. And I mean, whenever we now, as mathematicians, also work with causality or correlation, these things come up more and more. You know. But these are also dangerous things, because I will explain it at the end of the. They are now also used, these techniques, in our financial markets. And that's crazy to do that. But they do it anyway. So, yeah.
So, question?
Yes? Yes.
Do you test one input value at a time, or do you test?
No, it can be several. It's for me. I did a project on music and emotions, a formal project. It's called EmoSynth. And in this project, what we were trying to do was develop a music generation system that can make music that makes you specifically calm down or makes you stressed. It's a system that understands the effect that music has on you. So, and for that, you have a black box method. And the black box method, the input in this project is your biophysiological reactions. Your heart rate and your stress level will be the input. So you have continuous two-dimensional input that you give. So.
And can you still explain the model that's in your black box?
No, it's based on a genetic, no, when people ask it technically, it's based on genetic programming. Genetic programming is a sort of an, they call it an optimization algorithm based on the rules of Darwin. That's basically, but no.
It doesn't make any sense.
It makes a lot of sense.
Programming the rules of Darwin.
Yeah.
Which means you have an iterative process. You take every generation and then you test, take the best one and you multiply it so many times until you have an idea.
So that makes sense.
Because basically all mathematical problems, and you're also a mathematician? Yeah. All mathematical problems, you also know that, they're basically boil down to one and the same problem. Always find the optimum in a sort of a abstract space. That's all you have to do in mathematics, you know? I mean, for me, I mean, all the problems that I encounter, you can really, even if they are very complex statistical models, you have to find the right parameters for this model, but it always boils down to you have a very complex surface in a multidimensional space, not in a three-dimensional space, and then you have to walk around with your boots in the space, and then you have to find the highest top in the space. But of course, if the space is very limited, it's easy because you can look around everywhere. But the problem is that most spaces are infinitely big. So you cannot look all, you cannot go and check everything. And that's, for example, the genetic algorithms are one of the best ways to find the top in this surface space. What it does is you have to you have to encode all the places in your surface as a sort of the DNA strings. And then, to make a long story short, you just go around, then you see it's going down, bad, and then you jump over to a random other place. And then you search here, and then you do that. And you remember the places where you've been. If you're in a good space, you remember that. And then you go look in the vicinity of this, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. And in this way, you can search in a much more intelligent way into this very large, infinite space.
Is it a more complicated way or more elaborated way that the unsupervised machine learning? Because I can understand, I have made an introduction to.
Okay. No, it's a supervised learning. You can use
supervised
it as it's a supervised learning technique because learning, it's
where
a supervised.
You want to go and you have a data set to compare.
Yes, or you have a goal. Yeah. So unsupervised learning is even more difficult.
Yeah, but for me it was the future because we work with more and more data and the human will have just to.
Unsupervised learning, these are maybe also explain the concepts of supervised and unsupervised learning in mathematics. So I said you have the black box method, you have input and output. This is a sort of a learning system, you could say. You could say the black box is maybe a child that you're trying to teach to talk, English for example. Whenever you would teach supervised, you learn how to translate sentences, and whenever the child is wrong, you give a reprimand, and whenever it's right, then you say, you're doing well, good, and etc. That's supervised learning. You're watching and you're rewarding. But with an unsupervised learning, process, the rewards are not always there. So it's how, if you can make the similarity with the talking, then the child would in a sort of way confront itself whenever it translates a sentence of English, whether it's doing good or whether it's doing bad. It's embedded into the program of the whole thing itself. That's the difference. There's no person standing outside the system who says good or bad. And these unsupervised learning techniques in which you have an inherent sort of a value system, these are more and more becoming very important to deal with big data.
Because this is the kind of
it's learning
that we use for clusterization.
For example, yeah. It's learning and it's producing at the same time. It's learning and it's doing
but
things at the same
time. But you don't have historic data that you can, you've got a data set, but you,
no.
For example, you try to preview something, but you you don't have something you can compare to.
No.
Like the tank. Remember the tank for the Belgian army? You are trying to recognize Belgian tank from non-Belgian tank.
That's supervised
that
learning.
You've got a database with images that you already classified as Belgian or non-Belgian. This is another way could have been to have a data set with a lot of pictures of tank without knowing if it's Belgian or not, and you try to cluster them to make same kind of photo without knowing which one, and then from then you will eventually find that one of the cluster is the Belgian one or not, but it's a posteriori, it's not embedded in the
system. It's the same like if you would learn a robot how to drive into this room without hitting the walls constantly, that's unsupervised learning. Because the robot will bump into the wall and it's, you can program that it hurts for the robot and then it will start from scratch and learning, ah, I don't want to write to the wall because I get punished before that. That's, yeah, that's inherent in the system. Yeah. For me, myself personally, and the projects that I'm doing right now, I mostly use supervised learning because unsupervised learning is, it's to program, it's a hell a little bit. Well, yeah, there are reasons, it's not so easy to, yeah, because it's a completely different way of programming. That's the problem. For the things that I'm doing. Okay, so during my work, what I try to do is just combine mathematics and music, mathematics and multimedia arts. That's try to find connections between those two. That's what fascinates me. So, I'm also writing papers on several things from time to time. So I've written some papers on biofeedback on the Emo Center project that I'm working on. And also mathematical papers, so it's different branches. Okay. So for the project that I'm gonna present next Friday, I got interested into the financial markets, as everybody, because we were very confronted in 2008 with the crash. And if you look at the markets as a mathematician and from the constructive point of view, from the structural point of view, what's happening, it's really heaven, you know, it's crazy. It's a socially connected space that has so much implications on reality, but it, on the other hand, it's completely not real, it's fictitious, so it's, and it's mathematical, you can do statistics on it. There's structure, but there's chaos. It's like a big, you could say, an experiment, you know? The only stupid thing is that it has so much impact on our lives. That's really, so yeah. And I also want to understand it better, you know? Because I was like, because of my background, of course, I can try to understand also the mathematics more behind it. Because during my work as an applied mathematician, I've seen it, and people working in applied mathematics, you know it. I mean, mathematics is being used and misused a lot. So the reason is nobody, you can write very complex formulas that nobody understands. And then you could say, you know, this is the expert. He or she says that it's going this way. So the board says of a big company, okay, yes. But I'm against that, you know. Everything has to be transparent. Mm-hmm. And I'm really sometimes can get very upset that they're like hiding themselves behind these models or mathematics, because if you look in detail at the mathematics, it sucks in the most of the times, you know. That's really,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're
and
like...
the problem is that most of the time you don't have access to this kind of code.
That's the other point.
Highly patented and...
highly patented, or like, as I will talk, for example, Goldman Sachs, it's the biggest investment bank on Wall Street. Nobody knows what they're doing. Nobody. It's always the same, you know. Before the 2008 crisis, if you wanted to make a documentary, everyone, anyone who would speak to the press of Goldman Sachs is fired immediately. That's their policy.
Is it true that only when in the Wall Street there are only 10% of the transaction or the movement who are made by humans?
30
and
now.
The other ones
70%
like
is done by computers, by algo. It's called algo trading. It originated from the 80s, and now I will also explain it. 50% of all trades are made in the area of high frequency trading. So it means these are programs such that you could trade in 1 minute. Companies, they do 2-3 million of trades in one minute.
But I've looked into this, and it's such an advantage that the servers in the stock markets rent for 10,000 a month, just a place to rest your server box.
Yes, it's called co-location. Yes, but I mean, $10,000, if you know that traders like in Goldman Sachs, they have a portfolio. If you're a senior trader, you get a portfolio of hundreds.